Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Good Wednesday afternoon, everybody. SJS on this day. And, of course, with some snow swirling around the area this afternoon, so be careful with that. We'll keep you up to date on the forecast. Won't be much, but we'll keep you up to date on it. Also, we'll continue our talk today dealing with wrestling being dropped from the Olympic Games. The final vote is in September, so it's not an absolute, but very rare when minds have been changed. They are on that path to take it and knock it out in 2020. It will be a part of the 2016 Olympics. But if their plan goes through, as articulated this week, wrestling is gone in both Greco-Roman and freestyle in the 2020 Olympic Games. Also, we'll talk basketball. Bucknell, of course, swinging back into action. Nittany Lions tomorrow night have Iowa. Last night, Michigan. Michigan State, another beauty, played in the Big Ten in what is America's best basketball conference, at least in 2013. It goes in cycles. This time it's the Big Ten's turn. So we have a lot to talk about there, and we're counting down to college basketball. Rich Scarcell is going to join us from the Reading Eagle coming up in this show today. We'll talk to Rich, who covers college football and college basketball, get his take on everything that has happened this week. And the longtime beat writer for the Reading Eagle, who is just one of the true class acts you'd ever want to talk to and meet. Later in the week, we will have on Friday Ken Shurto, the former Olympic wrestler, who is going to join us and give us his take on the ramifications of wrestling potentially being dropped from the Olympic Games. That's on Friday. First of all, above the noise, here's Dan Patrick. They just take repeated shots at you.
I'm a big
target.
I
don't understand. Well, that can't be disputed. I mean, Lawrence is now shots at you.
That's right.
How do you
I have a chance to get back at him in the morning. It's no big deal.
Is that how you feel about this show?
Hey, got a great show for you today, Steve.
See, I knew it. he's in the fetal position, cowering in the corner again.
Got a great show for you, Steve.
Kellen Russell is an Olympic hopeful for Team USA in wrestling. Kellen, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, so the decision to lump wrestling into the pool of seven that will then... Look, you and I both know they're not going to make it. How did you feel when you heard that decision was made, that wrestling was put on the block?
It was a complete surprise to me and everyone else that I'm training with and, you know, everyone else that I've talked to from USA Wrestling. And, we really didn't think that wrestling was in danger at all in London. You know, everybody I talked to said it was sold out. I know guys who traveled all the way out there and couldn't even get tickets. So it seemed like, you know, the sport was really growing the last couple of years. So, you know, it was a big surprise and, you know, just heartbreaking news for the whole wrestling community.
2016, obviously, is still very much alive. And when they go to Rio de Janeiro, it's 2020 that's on the endangered species list. So is there, among those hopefuls in USA Wrestling, is there more pressure now in 2016 than ever before?
I think, you know, definitely this, makes it a little different than before, but, you know, we're still fighting to try to get it. Obviously it's been an uphill battle, but, right now, you know, we're still focused on training in 2016 and, you know, I don't think it's any different. We still want to win as many medals as we can. For me, it's definitely, you know, a big kick in the butt to try to get on the team for sure in 2016. Cause you never know what's going to happen in the future.
And for the most part, I mean, wrestling at the Olympic level, usually you're a little bit older. This is a college-age deal. You're usually an older wrestler at this particular stage, correct?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys on the team this year, between 27 and 32 usually, you know, once in a while I'll get a couple of younger guys or a couple of older guys, but that's usually the main, you know, age group right there. So, you know, I'll be a little bit young for 2016, but, you know, I'll be about 27, somewhere around there. So, you know, definitely, I was definitely looking for 2020s for another 4-year cycle there. So it does put a little bit, you know, different spin on it now.
Okay. For you, what's the training regimen like at this stage?
Well, right now I'm training with Cliff Keene Wrestling Club. You know, we practice once or twice a day, depending on how close we are to competition. Work out with some of the college guys, and then we also, I'm about to pack up here in a couple of days and head out to Belarus for a training camp, and then I'll be wrestling out there. I got a couple of teammates right now that are actually just about to travel to Iran to wrestle in the World Cup. So right now we're pretty busy just kind of traveling around and wrestling all over the world.
For you, what have been the adjustments from college-style, high school-style wrestling to Olympic freestyle? What are the adjustments you've had to make?
You know, it's a different focus. It's, you know, a two-minute period, then the score resets. There's, you know, you got to be aware of where you are on the mat. If you get pushed out, that's a point. So, you know, focusing on, you know, really scoring a lot of points and, you know, knowing where you are on the mat and not being able to, you know, put yourself in a position to get pushed out and lose that one point, that could be a difference between the period.
At this stage, you know, you talk about traveling internationally. What has that been like for you? And is, you know, obviously you have dreams of things, but what has it been like to travel internationally?
Well, I haven't quite traveled internationally yet. This will be my first trip overseas. I went up to Canada about a month ago to wrestle. But, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. Everybody I've talked to, you know, said it's a great time being able to go overseas and meet, you know, different people, train with different guys throughout the world. So, you know, I'm real excited about it. But, again, this will be my first time going overseas.
In terms of the competition that you're facing now, how much better has it made you?
Oh, I mean, right now, you know, throughout just from the, you know, less than a year ago from, well, you know, when I, after nationals, through Olympic trials and a couple other tournaments, you know, I've definitely, you know, jumped up, you know, three or four places on my skill level. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, going overseas and wrestling with those guys, you know, it's just going to keep growing more and more. You know, it is a different style of wrestling, so you need to focus on different stuff. But definitely, you know, just being more aggressive and everything like that's definitely helped me wrestling. You know, guys who are 28, 29 years old who have been wrestling freestyle for 5 or 6 years, or the foreigners who wrestle, you know, their whole life, that's all they know. So training with those guys, you know, training with the best, that's how you're going to be the best.
And, you know, and for you, you talked about where you've made great strides along the way in all of this. What about your conditioning now? And is conditioning different for freestyle? I mean, as opposed to the college style, is conditioning different between the two?
You know, you still need to be in really good conditioning for, you know, the international wrestling. So it's not too much of a difference. It is a little different that you wrestle for 2 minutes and you get, you know, a 30-second break there. So, and most matches, you know, I think the average Olympic match was like 4 minutes and a couple seconds. So most of them are only going about two periods. So, you know, it is, you're able to do, you know, a lot of short spurts and you get a little recovery time. So conditioning is not as big of a role, but you obviously still need to be in pretty good condition. And, you know, college conditioning, wrestling with college guys definitely helps, you know, especially when you wrestling overseas and stuff like that.
Well, we wish you nothing but the best, Kellen, very, very much. And I think this is a fun and interesting journey for you. We'll see how the 2020 thing turns out. But for you, it's going to be an experience of a lifetime to go through some of the things you're going through right now.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Kellen Russell with us. I think Bob Buhner, I think, hit it right on the head. Look, the two worst decisions that are made are the ones made out of panic and the ones made out of politics. This decision is not made out of panic. This decision is solely made out of politics. And I agree with Bob. I think this is an Eastern Rim pushed decision.
Well, it's like I said yesterday, look where the population besides the United States is. You know, those countries that have success in what I would consider the more minor sports in the Olympics have a lot to do with those sports getting in there in the first place. table tennis and badminton. I did not ever consider them Olympic sports. But because that's where the majority of the people are now, that's what the International Olympic Committee thinks most of the interest is. And wrestling is not of interest in that area.
And to me, to cap it at 26 sports.
Ridiculous.
Look, I mean, I don't understand it. I don't know. Is it a management problem? I mean, this is your deal. So, you know, this is your...
I cannot come up with a good reason other than the fact that they want to be able to keep the costs a little more reasonable for these cities that are getting the Olympics. The problem is the more sports you have, the more venues you need. And a lot of these cities have to build the venues. Right now, Russia is spending millions upon millions of dollars building venues, trying to get them done in time for Sochi in 2013. I'm sorry, 2014. That's the only thing I can think of. That's the only reason to keep the Olympic sports down in number.
Why was that again?
Because of the amount of money that has to be spent on building venues. I mean, London
That's
built...
why you need American TV money.
Well.
Okay? And that's why this is incredibly short-sighted. Okay,
I totally agree.
Sorry,
with that.
I checked my HD package last night. And I don't get the Beijing network.
Not yet.
Not yet. Interesting show today. Now, next half hour we have Eric Hackenberg, and then we're going to have Steve Martin. We're going to push Rich Scarcella back to tomorrow. Steve Martin is the play-by-play voice of ACC football and basketball, and is also the play-by-play voice of the Charlotte Bobcats. Duke and North Carolina play tonight. I want to get some context from him on the rivalry. And we'll talk a little Bobcats basketball. Her rant at 4:40, even though Mark Lawrence has decided to hurt his ratings with a rantless program, we have found it to be a lightning rod. You feel like a lightning rod, don't you?
I feel like I've been electrocuted.
What are you talking about, feeling like I've been electrocuted?
There's a lot of pressure now. I mean, this started as a little fun, tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. Now it's like, this is a lot of pressure now. Now I actually have to be prepared. I mean, you know, this show was fun. We could just be off the cuff. And now I actually have to be prepared.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to be prepared. Well, the wrestling thing is wrong. There's no question about it. But the Olympic movement has been laced with sickening politics for decades. And this is just the latest in a run. For example, it was the 40th anniversary of those killed at Munich. They wanted a moment. Couldn't have it. Cindy in Shamokin Dam. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Listen, I am just so proud of Coach Chambers and kind of blown away. What is the seating in the BJC?
Well, let me tell you what the highest number of students ever in the building. The highest number of students ever in the building was 6,000.
Times $10.
So if he goes at $10... He goes at $10 a ticket tomorrow night, and they get $6,000. He will make a $60,000 donation to Thon.
And, you know, last year after Joe passed, Coach Chambers showed up at Thon and really moved everyone with his remarks to the kids, to the cancer kids, to the Thon dancers, to all the volunteers there. And the basketball team couldn't be there for Thon itself but made a wonderful video. And I just feel that Thon is an example of what is Penn State, Steve. And it's a family that stands up for each other. And it's a family that extends itself for each other. And I'm just looking forward to the pep rally. And I'm wondering, do you know or do you have an opinion about which sports team is going to win this year?
I don't know.
Come on.
Steve's trying to get himself prepared to dance that long. So,
well,
you know,
no, he doesn't have to dance for the pep rally. But what happens is that the sports teams make their own routines, and they are just terrific.
Football was really good last year.
Football was really good last year. I think that gymnastics nailed it. You know, they won last year. Yeah. The year before, football brought it home, without a doubt. But I just didn't know.
And the people who brought it home are the ones that gave the $10 million.
Wow, that's true.
Okay, in the end, it's the kids who bring it. It's the Penn Staters who jump in and bring it. It is a signature event among many on campus that show what the true culture is here at Penn State. And if anybody wants to knock the culture, they can come to me face to face. And by the time they're done, they can leave with their tail between their legs.
Right. Here's a charity. If you take your child to Hershey and they have cancer, Thon will pay the rest of the bill after what your insurance pays, every penny. I had a woman stop me on the street to talk about how much this meant to her family, in the end, in tears. And, you know, I understand it. And even though her granddaughter did not make it, they just love Thon. So I just think it's terrific. It's one of the positive, the hidden, the secret, the not well-known positives about what goes on in Happy Valley.
Thanks. Thank you so much for your wonderful call. Thank you, Cindy.
Bye.
News is next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It's great to have you with us. Hey, a little snow around the area tonight, no big deal. No need to panic. Just be careful.
Actually, I'm kind of encouraging people to not make the trip up the Jersey Shore and listen on the radio instead tonight.
Actually, that's selfish.
Yes, it is. I'm not denying that.
Unreal.
I'm not proud of it, but, you know, it's shameless self-promotion. I agree.
Unreal. Well, you know what? You need to rest your voice. Okay?
You've now made thousands of listeners ecstatic.
That was the goal. We were going to, on the Hilscher's General Store hotline, call out. And we call out to Steve Martin, who was the play-by-play voice of the Charlotte Bobcats. Play-by-play voice of ACC basketball, ACC football, Duke North Carolina tonight. And he is from the cradle of broadcasters, the University of Maine, Gary Thorne. It's unbelievable. I don't know what's in
well,
the water.
There's Bill Patrick.
Huh?
There's a few others. Bill Patrick, who used to be on ESPN. He's now on
NBC NHL, yep.
Yep.
What is it about Maine?
We all want to get out.
And you did it. You're down south. You're in North Carolina.
Now we want to come.
Duke North Carolina tonight. You've been around it for such a long time. We know about the distance within your perspective on what it means year in and year out, regardless of records.
Well, it's not one of your run-of-the-mill rivalries where our school hates their school because they're two very different schools, to tell you the truth. North Carolina's a state institution, 28,000 students, while Duke University is a private college, only 6,800 students, and a lot of them are not residents of the state of North Carolina. It truly is a rivalry that's born out of the excellence that Bulls have carved out of basketball over the years. In the years that the ACC has been in existence, North Carolina's probably been more prevalent at the top, more years than you can count of the 60-odd years that the ACC has been in action. And Duke is the flavor of the day over the last 30 years. Their rivalry has been especially intense since Mike Krzyzewski has really established Duke right up there with North Carolina at the top of the pile through most of the years.
Now, when is this something throughout the state? I mean, because right now you're based in Charlotte, or is it in the eastern half of the state because there's only 8 miles where the intensity is felt?
No, it's statewide. And there are a lot of different factors that come in. There is, you know, through the years, North Carolina, especially since Dean Smith walked on campus in the early 60s in their basketball, North Carolina has risen to the top. It always was. The ACC, basically, in basketball in North Carolina, moved to a new level because of Everett Case at NC State. And it was NC State and North Carolina that were the chief rivals. And that was more of your traditional rivalry, this big school, that big school. And Duke has come in and out, but their most consistent level has been really since 1982, 1983, since Mike Krzyzewski came to school. So there are two things going there. And the other thing is that there are fans of Duke, and then there are fans that think anybody but Carolina. So if Duke's the flavor that's playing with today, the school we want. So that's a statewide thing. It goes all throughout the state, whereas, you know, NC State is an eastern North Carolina entity, and primarily they kind of rule the roost down there. The state of North Carolina, University of North Carolina is a prevalent school.
The NC State, Wake Forest, Duke, North Carolina, ACC tournament being in Greensboro, in Charlotte, and so forth. You can argue the heart of the ACC is the state of North Carolina. What has the thought been in the state of North Carolina about losing Maryland, especially to the gaining along the way Pitt and Syracuse?
The bigger event was losing Maryland, because Maryland was an original member of the ACC starting in 1953. Despite their location, they've always been part of the ACC, part of its lore. They've won its championship. They've represented in the national championship in 2002. That probably hit the ACC more of a surprise, more like a shock than the addition of the other schools, which actually is more of a necessity to keep the ACC astride of the SEC and the other schools in the consolidation mix-up.
How have you felt about the fact that the ACC went the same route with Notre Dame that the East did?
I've had several conversations with John Swofford, the commissioner of the ACC, and he feels that eventually Notre Dame will get a look at where this playoff situation is going and know that they have to align their football in a conference. And it's a matter of them getting used to that and the ACC getting used to a school, meaning Notre Dame, that has an opportunity to carve out its own little revenue niche and keep it from the other ACC schools about their exclusive contract. Texas has done that in the Big 12 with its relationship with ESPN. The ACC is going to have to get used to that before Notre Dame will join the ACC in football. But this was a good first step, John Swofford felt, to get them in. He feels he had a better chance to get them into the ACC as a full member than the Big East ever did.
Some feel there's a battle for survival in super conferences. How well is the ACC aligned to survive?
Bad question, because the other conferences, meaning the Big 12 in this instance, and the SEC and the Pac-12, have made their alliance, made their nation do football, which is now ruling the roost and probably will for some time. The ACC has made its gains among basketball schools, and arguably when Pitt, Syracuse, and Notre Dame after that, along with the originators of the ACC, minus Maryland, I think you can easily say that the balance of college basketball has shifted toward the Mid-Atlantic and into the ACC. But football is the number that drives the boat as far as the NCAA is concerned and college sports is concerned. It's blown up exponentially. the tradition of the SEC, of course, won eight straight national championships, has really tipped the scales. And I think the ACC and the other conferences, all of the other conferences, with the exception of the SEC, have been in a defensive position where they've had to kind of move and make moves to maybe not great football schools. They might have been in the past, but they are definitely great basketball schools.
Steve, is there a fine line between a conference, which you've seen with the ACC for so long, and becoming an association where it's too big?
I think we're almost crossing it. It's going to be interesting to see if the SEC goes to 16. They're at 14 now with the addition of Missouri and Texas. But we're close to crossing it. And in one hand, we're trying to replicate what the SEC has done, and that is just flat out tradition of football, and football is the major sport. All the other conferences, all they can counter with, and that's the ACC included, is market size. But the market size is applied to the SEC. I mean, after all, you've got Athens, Georgia, Oxford, Mississippi, Starkville, Mississippi. The biggest market in there is Nashville and Baton Rouge. I mean, that isn't the principle that they're working under. They're all trying to replicate the tradition, which will never be replicated, because you just can't take Tuscaloosa and plop it down in Boston. So the other schools are just trying to catch up, and I think we're closing in on what you say, an association as opposed to a conference.
The next part of this is that the conference tournament is grandfathered to all conference tournaments, and back when there was only one bid, it was the cutthroat conference tournament because you had to win it to get it, and the talent was great. It was unbelievable. And that's the ACC tournament. When it's been in Greensboro, incredible. Charlotte, incredible. Atlanta's done well. There's been some talk about the possibility of Syracuse, BC, Pitt being in this neck of the woods. Hey, maybe we ought to try out New York. How would the feeling be in the South if they, quote, tried out New York?
Well, I think we've already crossed that in the ACC, really, with going to Tampa and every fifth trip to Washington, D.C. that we won't make anymore.
Right.
So why not New York if it's on the same is Tampa and Washington D.C. It's nice to when you hold it in North Carolina, it's definitely going to be a sellout. It's going to be the toughest ticket in town, even though it's not, as you say, the romantic appeal as it used to be, where only the winner would go to the NCAA tournament. So in meaning that, it dissed the regular season. And it just, you know, and look at the example of South Carolina. I think they lost one game, ACC. They didn't get a chance to go to the NCAA.
Right.
And that was really the prelude to South Carolina leaving the ACC in the early 70s. So, and that's when that tournament was, the ACC tournament was better than ever. But it's continued its greatness, even with multiple bids to the NCAA since then. It means because of its competitiveness. You look at NCAA. Of 1983, they went to the national championship as fourth team in the AAC. Mm-hmm. They had to beat Princeton in Virginia. They had to beat North Carolina and Michael Jordan to get to the NCAA tournament alone, and then win six straight to go to Albuquerque and beat Houston. So the tournaments had some meaning. I'm questioning now when it gets to 16 teams. What kind of meaning it's going to have when they get to 14 even here next season. Roy Williams at North Carolina has been taken over the coals by the fans here by saying, well, you know, the ACC tournament really doesn't mean much. You just stay sharp. You might not be saying that this year because the team is not as good as it's been in the past. The ACC tournament can be a launching pad to the ACC. If you stand in two rounds of the ACC tournament and you've won 50% or more of your conference games, then you should go to the NCAA.
Exactly. Exactly. By the way, the 1983 NC State team, I've always laughed about that. People forget with Derek Wittenberg, they started 12-0, and then they got hurt. then he came back.
Yeah.
So that's always been one of those like lost in history moments.
They had a great team.
Yeah, they actually did, and people forget that. The Bobcats situation. What? I guess maybe we can, you and I
now
can.
Now you're headed down a grassy hole here.
excuse me. What team do I broadcast for at the moment, Steve? Okay. So you and I could, this is a conversation where I think of all the broadcasters in the country, you and I can have this conversation. What is it like, though, on a nightly basis, seeing the way this league is set up and where the Bobcats are positioned?
Well, it's interesting that we're in Indiana tonight for a couple of reasons. If you look at the Indiana Pacers and what they've done over the years, they're a mid-market team with another major league franchise in the city, meaning the Colts. So that means they got to fight to sell tickets. And it's hard to fight to sell tickets the way that the league is set up for mid-market teams to be a success.
Mm-hmm.
You can't import South Beach to Charlotte or Indianapolis. You can't import the variety that you get in New York and the mass quantity that you get in markets like New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles here. So you have to build it a certain way. You got to build through the draft. You got to be smart there. Your number one priority is not building through free agents. It's through the draft, and then secondly, making trades as a third team in that has cap space to accept what a team that's brushing the luxury tax can pass on to you. That you can eventually turn into creating cap space for your own team to keep building for the future. That's a 4 or 5 year process that I'm talking about. Indiana is at probably at year 4 or 5. The Bobcats are at year 2. Indiana's at 31 and 21, and the Bobcats are at 12 and 39. So you've got to exercise some patience. As a broadcaster, you've got to look past the obvious that your team's not very good.
Right.
But you get excited on things like, hey, that's a skip pass.
Wow. Right.
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you get your audience excited about that. And when one of your young guys has a good performance despite the fact that you lost the game, what we're seeing now with the Bobcats as opposed to last year when they set an NBA record for futility is that they're more competitive this year. They're winning more, probably are on a 20-win pace for the season, which would be a good stepping stone from last year. And then you get in another good draft pick this year. The Bobcats have 3 first-round draft picks that they have access to. They have cap space to accommodate to be the third team in a trade, or they could pick up a mid-level free agent. Which is what they did last year. They picked up Ramon Sessions in the offseason, and he's the second leading scorer, a great professional, and he hasn't started a game this season for the Bobcats. So it's one of the success stories of this team that you'll pile them up as you go along, and maybe in 4 or 5 years, us being in year 2, you'll get up there where you're in the playoffs, and Michael Jordan, the team's owner, wants to be not just in the playoffs, but in the playoffs in a higher round.
Yeah, no question. You mentioned how the Pacers are in the same town with the Colts. You're in the same town with the Carolina Panthers. We know parity in the NFL and the way the system works in the NFL is that the Carolina Panthers can have the first overall pick in the draft, and they can get a Cam Newton, and suddenly they win 7 games and be a 7-19. Now, Carolina fell back a little bit this year, but you can get impact players in the NFL draft. How difficult is it to get impact players in an NBA draft? And how difficult is that to explain to fans in your area that the process between the two sports is completely different?
It certainly is. In the NFL, you're talking sheer volume. I mean, you go through X amount of rounds, 7 or 8, or however more that they go around. They can load up with 10 or 12 guys in the off season, and it makes if one busts, well, that's okay. You got 10 other guys that come along and fill a role and actually fit your team before long. With the NBA drafting just 2 rounds, and you make a mistake in your first round pick, or you make a mistake in your second round pick, it's something you can't get out of, especially in the first round pick for 4 years. And you hope you don't make those mistakes. You go all over the map. It's hard to tell what these young kids are going to do. only 1 year of exposure to college now that you can't draft him right out of high school, you still don't have a you don't have a good read on what they can do. I mean, there's plenty of examples of kids who are Chandler Parsons, for instance. He's a second round pick out of Florida, and he's the second leading scorer for the Houston Rockets. But did anybody know that on draft day? No, I don't think so. This is franchise Indiana took a great chance taking Paul George out of Fresno. They took him with the 10th pick of the 2010 draft. And everybody just kind of, you know, they just kind of chuckled at him. And now this kid's going to the All-Star game. He's averaging 24 points a game, and he leads the Indiana Pacers. So that's what you hope happens to your franchise somewhere down the line in this process. And the Bobcats hope that they're in that position.
Steve, it was an absolute pleasure. I've admired your work for many, many years and wish you nothing but the best. And hopefully we can get you back on the show here at some point and discuss many other topics.
Yes, well, I hope to. The other thing that's going to be interesting tonight, we got with Duke and Carolina, we got Tyler Hansbrough going up against Gerald Henderson.
That's
and the
right.
last time they met in the Duke-Carolina game, there was blood spilled.
So, there you go.
Now it'll be interesting to see those two get on the floor tonight.
Now we're ready.
Yes, we're ready. We're ready to go. We've drawn blood.
There you go. Steve, thank you, my friend. Steve Martin, play-by-play voice, Charlotte Bobcats, ACC basketball, ACC football. Back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
I really need a used car.
Sunbury Motors has lots full of used cars.
But it has to be a good used car.
Well, they're not good.
What?
They're great. Sunbury Motors has over 300 used vehicles to choose from. Cars, SUVs, and trucks so good, we wouldn't sell them if we wouldn't drive them. That's probably why we consistently sell over 200 cars a month. And when it comes to new, Sunbury Motors is the largest Ford dealership in the central Susquehanna Valley. Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices.
And I'm a smart shopper, and I know what the price should be for the car I want.
Well, here at Sunbury Motors, you get our lowest price promise. We research prices on used cars so much that if you find a better deal, we'll beat it. That's a promise. So here's your keys.
Thanks.
Take a test drive today at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and our Kia dealerships at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Shop 24/7 and see our inventory at sunburymotors.com. That's sunburymotors.com. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.